Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Good Monday morning, everybody.
Hey.
Hope you had a fantastic weekend. And let me ask you this. I know that you guys aren't golf guys. I know that you guys are not auto racing guys. And I know that we have varying degrees of interest in international soccer. Did you guys check out any of the live sports this weekend? Because we had a European soccer, we had live golf, and we had a live NASCAR event.
That'd be a big fat no.
I had a feeling.
I can only speak for myself.
LZ?
No, I did not. I did turn on the television at one point and saw they were playing like a cornhole with masks on.
Not the cornhole. There was golf. Like, there was NASCAR.
I saw that, Travis, soccer. And I just turned it off and walked away. The only thing I've seen live really has been that day, that Friday, that there was live tennis, and I was describing to you guys that it was playing in someone's backyard or something like that. That's the only live event that I've seen since the pandemic.
I watched a little bit of the golf yesterday, and it was a charity thing. They raised millions of dollars, so good for them for raising all this money.
How did you watch golf on TV?
What do you mean?
If it's Tiger Woods and his last couple shots, that's it. But I can't just sit and watch golf.
Oh, Key, you're missing out.
You might as well not have.
You can relax. You can have a nice little nap. You can have a beer on the couch. It's glorious. You don't know the truth.
Just get a white noise machine and save the cable bill.
I'm telling you guys right now, you have not experienced the full rainbow that is life until you've taken a nap with golf on TV. It's glorious.
That's exactly what it's going to do. It's going to put you to sleep.
Oh my God. It was great. I loved it. I watched a little bit of the NASCAR event too. It was just good to see some stuff. And like you said at the beginning, Key, you know, we know that the Lakers are back in their facility. We know that Major League Baseball has talked to Governor Newsom about maybe trying to get I don't know if it's a dispensation or some sort of waiver so they can go into Dodger Stadium. We'll see what that looks like ultimately later. But it does feel like this last week was a significant step towards getting some stuff back on TV.
It is. And I think, you know, as it go from week to week, I think you get closer and closer to possibly having sports, whether it's the Lakers, whether it's the NFL, getting back into the buildings. I think there's something like, I want to say about 25 of the 32 NFL team states have opened up loosened the restrictions on a lot of different things. So as you could start to see, things are starting to take shape. You know, obviously the new norm is going to be what it is. I mean, everywhere you go, although yesterday, as I explained to you guys off air, I was driving through one of the Malibu canyons. And off to the side was a little kind of, I don't know if it was a shack, restaurant. I didn't, put it this way, I didn't want to stop. It was about 150 to 200 bikers that was all in front of this place. And they had a leather jacket. I mean, they was, you know, real biker type dudes that you see on TV. And they had no social distancing in their bloodstream at all. They was just like, oh, yeah, homie, what's up? Like, right? I was like, and you know, my kids, they pick up on everything. So they look at it and they're like, those guys are too close. You know, it's like, oh, God. But so, you know, you are, though, except that getting back to some sort of, I don't know if you want to call it normal, but some sort of being able to move around a little bit. And so hopefully this will continue on a positive side. And at some point in time, we'll get sports back on air the way we like to see it.
Can't wait. We're getting closer, it seems, every single week. Let's go to the Brian Russell piece of last night. We knew that this is how it was going to end. We knew that that shot was the sixth championship. We know that Brian Russell kind of stumbles as he's trying to guard Michael. Michael may or may not have pushed him. LZ says it's a push. Bob Costas says it was a maitre d' moving a customer into his chair.
Well, Brian Russell said it was a push.
He's got some investment in this.
But you can see B. Russell's momentum going in that direction. It was a push, but his momentum was already headed that way. So when you nudge somebody on their hip, okay, I know from a technical standpoint because I've done it playing football. When I'm running a route and I get ready to stop and break out of my route and that player's going the opposite direction already And if I, you know how you see guys, Travis and LZ, push, extend their arms at the shoulder level or on the back of a guy and a guy goes flying?
Sure.
You keep him tight to you and you hit him on that hip just enough, bam, right on that hip, he's going to go flying. That's not offensive pass interference because I did not extend my arm. So you're taught those sort of things. What Michael did, because it was in the open, it was the last shot, it was pretty, he was up in the air, he was pumping the fist at the same time, 0.6 seconds, the whole thing is you saw it, and it was out there, and it looked crazy. You got a big body dude, not all great athletically, so the moment that you push him, he going to fall all over the place, so it looks more egregious than what it really truly was.
So I want to come back to the push for a second because that's the shot. That's the climax of the entire series. Did you guys know the story leading up to that where Brian Russell, when Michael was doing his hiatus playing minor league baseball, that when he went to go watch a game, a Bulls game, that Brian Russell came up to him and said, "Yo, man, why did you quit? You know I could have been able to guard you." Like, what the hell is he doing? Why is anybody at that point in Michael Jordan's career ever yanking on that guy's cape? We know what he does with slights that weren't even there. We know, like, what was it, LeBradford Smith, where he didn't even say anything and Michael created something out of thin air, and yet guys are still going out of their way to antagonize this man. Are they that dumb?
Well, it's not that. It's not dumb, right?
So it's pretty dumb, Key.
What you do is it turned out this way because he happened to, it's Michael Jordan, so he happened to light you up that night. But I'm sure there are nights, as LZ would say, that people have said something to Mike that ain't in here where he had an awful shooting night. That them clips aren't in here, but he probably came back and got you at some point later on. This just happened to be set up perfectly where B. Russ had the opportunity to see Jordan probably for maybe when it was a playoff, so it couldn't have been the first time. You right? I mean, it had to see him in a regular season. So where's the regular season footage when you got it? Right? I mean, am I wrong for that?
Well, look, Michael got just about everybody. I hear what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. So when you good, you're going to get everybody anyway.
But
I'm sure there's people that's out there that says something to MJ. LZ was saying, Michael Jordan ain't never stepped up to nobody at the Knicks in Detroit. MJ was all in the face of Xavier McDaniel, all in his face. So it's kind of like you when you producing something, you put in kind of some stuff.
No, of course,
the way you want it to be.
But there's also a long laundry list of guys that went and said something to Michael. We saw it with Charles Barkley, got the MVP. Michael said, "Oh, okay." We saw B.J. Armstrong knock down a winning shot early in a playoff series, and Michael went, "Oh, okay." The LeBradford Smith story. Karl Malone's the MVP. "Oh, okay. Watch this." Brian Russell
but he was
says,
going,
"You know,
but
I wouldn't
coach,
be able to check you."
He was
Come
going.
On, man.
He said, "Watch this in 2020." He said, "Watch it in 2020." That's all I'm saying.
He's making it up?
No, I'm saying he was going to be fired regardless, though. He was going to be fired regardless because he's Michael Jordan. There was nothing. Like, I texted y'all last night. When I texted you last night, he sat back and watched all them dudes miss that three. The horse game. He watched them half court. He watched them all miss. And then he hit it, bam.
Go back to the very beginning of this when Danny Ainge was telling everybody, people, stop saying that Clyde Drexler's on his level. Do you not get it? Do you not get what this guy's about? Do you not know what he's about to do to Clyde with y'all saying this? This was the common theme throughout the entire docuseries. And I understand that Michael's thumbprints are on this. I get it, and I get how it's going
to
come out.
But B-Russ was never going to be able to check MJ, whether it was game one, the regular season. Because I'm having fun. I'm just talking trash. You old. I'm young, and I'm having fun with it. So now you use that fuel to come and get me. You probably had got him in game one or two. I mean, regular season anyway. He just happened to use the clips in the playoffs. Because you can't do nothing with that type of person. When dudes are good like that, ain't nothing you can do with the diesel, man. Ain't nothing you could do with Kobe, LeBron. There's nothing you could do. If I said nothing, he's going to do the same thing to me. If I said something, he's going to do the same thing to me.
I just wouldn't talk smack to him.
Nope.
No, you don't want to talk smack to people like us. No, you don't, because I'm going to come and get you. My attitude is I'm going to remember what you said. I ain't going to never forget it.
But they kept doing it. This is the point. This is the whole conversation that they kept. Like, when Reggie Miller hit that shot in Indiana, right? And you see the Larry Bird's face when Reggie Miller hits that shot was arguably one of my favorite parts of the series last night, because Larry Bird knew we're still in deep trouble. Michael gets another shot here, and the whole place is going crazy. Reggie's doing that little 360 jump in the air, pump his fist thing. And Larry Bird knew, because Larry Bird had been around that dude, had seen that dude do what he does. And he's like, guys, this is not over yet. And the ball rimmed out. He just happened to miss. Larry Bird knew not to say anything to that guy. Larry Bird knew not to underestimate Michael Jordan ever.
But that's the same way it is with certain quarterbacks.
It's even one better than that, Travis. It's not simply that he knows about that dude. Larry Bird himself, as a player, has been in that exact same position. You know, remember that running skyhook, that magic hit that put them up. The Celtics still had time. And Bird almost hit that shot to win that game.
From the corner.
From the corner, exactly. So not only does Bird know about that dude, Bird as a great player just knows about the situation. And because he has that depth of understanding, he knew not to celebrate, because he knew as a baller himself, the last thing you want to do is celebrate when you leave a guy like me time to get a shot up.
Well, anybody that can shoot the peel or kick a long field goal or engineer drive with a certain amount of time left on the clock, that's why they are who they are. You don't ever want to, you know, start to celebrate early when you got 40 seconds on the clock in football, or you got, you know, a few ticks on the clock in basketball, or a guy is coming up, you know, with his last out in baseball, but the guy who's coming up is a guy who could just drill it 550 feet. You just wait till it's over with, and Larry Bird is certainly one to be able to not only do it himself, but also has been on the other side of watching guys do it to him throughout his career. So, you know, there's a perspective that's there. Reggie Miller, Reggie Miller was not afraid of Michael Jordan. You know, he felt he may not have been Michael Jordan, but he wasn't afraid of Michael Jordan. He had his own credentials to back that up.
No, he wasn't scared of him, but he also wouldn't say his name. I mean, there's a certain level of respect where you won't even say the man's name out loud, that he called him that guy or the black cat or whatever. You know, he had a couple of
black
different euphemisms
for him. Black Jesus, man, like I told
Black Jesus.
Black Jesus. I told y'all that a long time, a couple years ago. I told you, man, the dude's nickname is Black Jesus. and Raj and Jorge, not that Jorge, but the other one. I ain't never heard of Black Jesus. Okay, well, y'all ain't paying attention.
Just for the record, Jesus is already black. Just putting that out there.
You know, call yourself Black Jesus, and whenever you start referring to yourself in the third person as such, you know you cold.
He's certainly that. All right, we talked a little bit about Reggie Miller and Larry Bird right there. Was Indiana the greatest threat to knocking
Karl Malone.
The Bulls off?
We didn't talk about Karl Malone's shirt tucked in his jeans, though.
Oh, we'll get to that, too. A non-logoed lavender T-shirt. We'll get into Karl Malone's wardrobe as well. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, before we get to Karl Malone's wardrobe and him going on the bus to congratulate MJ, I can tell both of you guys right now that I will not have my T-shirt tucked into my shorts when I take on John Ireland this Saturday at Yorba Linda, at Black Gold Golf Club in Yorba Linda. It is Ireland versus Travis part two. The loser has to do double duty. The winner gets a day off. I'm looking to go back to back from last year to this year. And you can watch hole by hole coverage on our social media accounts at ESPN Los Angeles. And a big thanks to our friends at Travis Matthews. They are excited to introduce TM Rewards. It's their way of rewarding customers for their loyalty, free shipping, and returns on all purchases. You can sign up at TravisMatthew.com today. So, again, thanks to Travis Matthew for hooking us up with that. And I'm going to go back to back. And Karl Malone had his T-shirt tucked into his jeans, Key.
No, I saw it a couple times, obviously, throughout the documentary. But when you really got a real good shot of it is when he's getting on the bus. The T-shirt, first of all, the T-shirt was big. He already is like a triple X, so I don't even know what the size that was. It had extra material, so it was all crunched together. Then, if you a fashion guy, LZ, you zoom into the waist. It looked like he took the belt and tried to choke his waist and pull it as tight as he could to the last little button. And I'm sitting there last night, and I'm saying, man, this is 98, fool. It ain't 78.
And then, man, listen, 98, 88, 68, that is never a good look.
Man, that was crazy. I'm like, Karl Malone, I get it. You ride the motorcycle. People ride motorcycles. I got it. I understand. But you taking the country bumpkin thing too far. Like you really are taking it too far.
That look is like a country bumpkin grandfather dressed up to go to Walmart, like with the t-shirt.
And if they would have turned, it around,
it just looked ridiculous.
I bet you the front of the pants was right underneath his pecs. It was crazy. But MJ had some fashion mishaps too.
Like, well, you got the big suits.
The big suits was fine, but the white socks? Like, come on, man. What you think, you moonwalking? Michael Jackson or something? I said, man, what the hell? I'm like, man, I got to call a dude and tell him, say, man, I don't know what you was doing. He had on white socks with a suit.
He had one suit, man. Looks like he was a mustard stain, like a giant mustard stain with a chocolate top. His little
with
head
about 17,000 buttons.
Nothing but buttons. I was like, dog. And I was like, damn, did we do that? I guess we did.
Michael did. That's
but you
sure.
know, you know, back in that day though, LZ, when you was cold, and my son Vance is Van. I wish I could just videotape him as he's watching stuff with me. He noticed some of the same things adults would notice at his age. Jordan rolls through the Porsche. He goes, man, Michael Jordan was cold, Dad. He had air on his license plates. Like back in that day, your license plates was personalized as an athlete. You know, it's like if you didn't have a gold chain with a personalized little number or whatever, you had the license plate. His license plate said air. I mean, like, come on. Like, I'm Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm that dude. I know I'm that dude. There ain't nothing y'all can do with me. I'm going to do what I want to do. That just, I know he was feeling good. I know he's feeling good.
Keith. Is that normal that guys that lose big moments go into the other guy's locker room or onto the bus the way that Karl Malone did? Because we saw Karl Malone after the championship go on and give Michael some respect, and that's when we saw the jeans and the t-shirt tucked into the jeans. But I it was odd to me. Maybe it's just that because we don't get to see behind the scenes like that all that often. But to see Karl Malone go out of his way to find Michael and give him love like that, I was surprised to see it.
Yeah, that's regular. That's not anything unnormal. It's one of those deals where it doesn't happen every single game, but I bet you for every game that's played, that at the end of those games, one player from a team seeks out another player from every single game that's played, because it's just, you know, whether I'm seeking you out, getting on the bus, or I'm catching you in the tunnel, like you saw with Stockton and Malone sitting on whatever the cart, and MJ walked by. Yeah, all right, man. Yeah, yeah. Basically, he said, I just kicked y'all ass. I'm out. And they just sit there and couldn't say nothing about it. Right? They just was like, man, there he goes again. Man, look at Jesus walking by. Wow, he touched us. That's what it is. I've been on teams where guys have came onto the bus, and I've been on teams where I've gone onto a bus to see a coach or see somebody because I'm not going to see him anymore. This is it. I'm not going to see you for a minute. So go on there. You just pay. You don't even think about it. Once the game is over, you're like, you know, I could talk to you now, but I'm not talking to you before the game. I'm going to talk to you after the game. Might holler at you, you know, how your kid's doing. Those conversations take place. Could be an old teammate. You know, they were on an Olympic team together, and they just have mutual respect for one another. It looks odd.
I can respect you.
It looks odd to those people that have never been in that position. So it looks a little odd to you. You would say Michael Jordan probably would never do that. No, he probably wouldn't go on the bus, but he certainly are going to see a guy in a tunnel. Magic Johnson hugged Michael Jordan.
I remember Magic going to do it, but to go onto the, it just seemed like, did that take, because it's one thing to walk across the hallway into the other locker room and say, hey, good job, man, I'll catch you down the road. It's another thing to go find the bus, get on the bus, that's a whole nother level.
But here's what I'm going to say to you, Travis, as you know, and LZ know, covering teams, the bus could be simply outside of the parking lot where you're going to your car, in your locker room. I'm setting a picture for you. You might be in your locker room, get showered, changed, doing whatever. You come out, and you say, where's Michael? And they say, well, he got on the bus already. As you walk into your car, the bus is near your car. You say, well, let me go on and say bye to him, and that's it, opposed to just going and getting your car and taking off. That's all. It looks weird. I get it. I understand it looks weird, but it's not something that does not happen. It happens literally every single game. I bet you there's a guy from a team talking to another guy, whether it's in the tunnel or in the parking lot or on the bus.
I guess he's just wired differently, Travis and Key, because that's the dude that just took the ball from me on like the last time I got to touch the ball that season and went down and won a chip in my house.
It makes Karl Malone
again.
It makes Karl Malone look soft. I understand from a sports standpoint, it might make him look soft, but I'm giving you the realistics of it. It happens. It's not out of the ordinary that to go and say, like me, if I'm peed off at a game like that, oh, I ain't talking no damn Jordan. In fact, I might put some voodoo on the bus and see if it, you know, I ain't mess around and make the tires flat. But so I get it. A normal game, man, championship game, I'm probably not speaking to him after the game. I'll catch you in Reno at the golf tournament.
You know, there are so many different moments where we get to see a little behind the scenes stuff, like the trip onto the bus. But you know what struck me about a bunch of these things is that it was during the section of the show last night where they were talking about how Michael was always in the moment. Michael was always very present and in going through what he was going through and not thinking about what was coming next or anything else. Michael seemed to genuinely enjoy those give and take moments where he's getting, you know, just the absolute crush of people that's descending on him once he comes into the building. And he's laughing, he's joking, he's calling guys by their name. You could tell that he really enjoyed that. Whereas, you know, you see the pregame now where the guys do the stroll underneath the stadium and they're going to the locker room and they're doing the little fashion, you know, walk and kind of showing what they're wearing. They've all got their headphones on. They're buried in the moment. They really rarely say anything. Michael was really incredibly pleasant in those moments, and you just don't see that level of pleasantness from athletes, much less pleasantness from those stars in those moments heading to the biggest moments. It's usually all business. Michael was having a ball.
Well, I think one is Michael Jordan rolled with a crew. Like LZ and I would tell you, when you got your crew, everything looks and it invites big. See, a lot of these guys that play professional sports now, they don't have the star power in the Snack, Crackle, Pop. There's a handful, then there's the ones that think that they do. And you really don't. You're trying to create that, and it's not the same. Well, Michael Jordan, when he walks in a room, Kobe Bryant walks in a room, Kobe Bryant would say hi to people and do all of those sort of things too. Magic Johnson, it just depends on your personality and who you are. I'm sure we can find footages of LeBron James greeting everyone. And remember, the media nowadays can only go so far in a tunnel pregame. They're going to stop them at some point. Say, no, hold on. You can't cross this barrier. So you really never get a chance to see the entire actions of one where the reason I am taking it this far is because I always greeted the people and had conversations with the security or whoever is there at the entrance door going through the tunnel. So it's not – you just see it because the cameras are there. But I would argue and say there's a lot of players that probably speak to the people when they walk through doors.
I get the security guards and all that stuff. I'm just saying that Michael was the most famous human being on earth at this point, arguably. And everywhere he goes was a crush of people, and he seemed to be okay with it.
You got to remember, people in this day and age, they're not letting you get that close anyway no more. Like, you can't get that – fans can't get that close to the players like they used to. When you walk through the tunnel, there's a crazy amount of people walking by. It's not like that anymore. When we drove our cars in Tampa, for instance, it wasn't that way in Dallas because I parked underneath the tunnel, and it wasn't that way in New York because I parked underneath at the tunnel. But in Tampa, you had to park. So when you parked your car in the parking lot, there was a barricade that was set up to walk into the stadium, and on left and right-hand sides, you had to go through a mob just to get into the stadium because that's just the way that they set things up. Every team is a little bit different.
All right. The NFL is considering a plan that they believe will incentivize minority coaching hires. Is it a good plan? Yeah. We'll find out next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, we'll go back to The Last Dance here in just a second. I'm still incredibly bummed out that that is over. But there's a little NFL news this weekend that ESPN confirmed right before the weekend started that the NFL is considering improving draft pick selections in the third round for teams that hire minority candidates as head coaches or general managers. Also, teams could receive compensatory picks if minority candidates remain as a head coach or GM into their third year, or if a team loses a minority candidate who becomes a head coach or GM with another team. So basically, if you hire a minority to be your head coach, general manager, quarterback's coach, that you can get a compensatory pick or improve your draft status. Is this a good plan, or is this the worst idea you've ever heard in your life?
Wait, you said quarterback coach. I thought it was GM and head coach only. Now they put there are position coaches as well?
Yeah, let me read you this part, Key. There are also possible draft pick incentives for hiring a minority coach as a coordinator or quarterback's coach.
All right, you stay out of it. Go to the restroom. Me and Elsie will have this.
The floor, gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Well, first of all, it's ridiculous. If you got to incentivize head coach, general managers, or presidents of teams to hire general managers and head coaches of minority status, is ridiculous. In one, okay, you should hire the people based on their skill set in being good. Okay, a guy like Eric Bieniemy should be hired by his skill set in knowing how to coach football, something that you're looking for, not the fact that he's just a minority and you could get a better draft selection. That's ridiculous. That doesn't because first of all, there's no real incentive that's there. I'm going to move you up a few spots in the third round because you hired a minority. Like that's so stupid to even come up with this plan and try to present it to the committee to even have anybody sign off on it. Like who the hell want to be hired just based on proving some spots in a round? No, I want to be hired based on me knowing that I can do it and I'm qualified to do it. When you hiring dudes that's not qualified. Now, I ain't picking on nobody, but Matt LaFleur wasn't. You think he was the most qualified dude? Or Taylor at Cincinnati was the most qualified head coaches? They need to stop. They need to stop, man, for real. This league is the hiring practices in my league is something else, boy. And then in terms of the general managers that go, we only got two of them, one in Cleveland and one in Miami. Like seriously? You trying to tell me that there are no minorities that are out there for the other 30 teams when you go to look to hire, that you could hire based on their knowledge of the game and their skill set and knowing how to run the whole deal? Because them dudes that's in positions to run, Mike Mayock is the general manager of the Oakland Raiders. You think he was qualified to be hired? You think he learned based on the NFL Network and covering the draft on television that he could be a general manager? But you didn't scrutinize that. You didn't have no problem. You just signed it. Signed on, oh, yeah, we hire Mayock. I'm like, come on, man. Enough.
I agree 100% with Key. And I would even add this caveat. Well, actually, there's two. Number one, not first round pick, not second round pick, your third round pick. So if you want to do the sort of affirmative action BS notion that you're kind of raised, put some real teeth in this thing. First round pick, okay, all right, maybe you're really trying to shake up the system. Third round pick is like a winky wink to me. But beyond that, nothing says I don't have any black friends than something like this being floated out into the ether. Because if you have friends who are not like you, whether it's from religion or gender or race or whatever it is, if you have friends like that, naturally have friends like that, you don't feel the need to put them in a situation in which they have to be othered or ostracized or feel like a token. You don't do that to your friends. You don't go and put your friends in a position in which they have to explain why they're there. You know, as someone who is a double minority, there's no greater insult than having people assume I got my job because I'm black or because I'm gay. And you know what? Even 20 plus years in this business, I still get those jabs. You're only there as an affirmative action hire. Nobody wants to be the affirmative action person. So why would you want to have a head coach or a GM walk around on the field, walk around in the stadiums, and have so many people in there assume he's only there because of the color of his skin? That is an insult. And if you have legitimately have people that you love and care for in your life who are of that ilk, you wouldn't want to see them in that situation. So this totally reminds me, guys, of when Golf Magazine had that image of a noose in reference to Tiger Woods, and everyone got in trouble, and people were trying to figure out how in the hell did this cover make it to print? Well, look who made the decision. There was not a single person of color involved in the decision-making. Because if it had been a person of color involved in that conversation, they might have pointed out that a noose in reference to Tiger Woods was not a good look. But because no one was there, no one really knew how bad it would be received until it was too late. And once again, this is how it looks. The NFL doesn't see how bad this looks until it's out publicly, and now it's too late. You guys look like a bunch of racists.
Well, they look just like something, that's for sure.
Just so we're clear, they're considering this. This has not been implemented. It would need to pose. It would need to.
Okay, well, I'm considering killing somebody. Does it your opinion on how I look?
24 of 32 votes would need to be a thumbs up for it to go into practice.
I understand the consideration, but the fact that you even put thought to it to have it be considered is upsetting enough. Like, and for those people out there that think, oh, well, I mean, isn't something better than nothing? Well, you don't get it. Like, you don't get it.
So,
like,
Keith, let me ask you this. If any sort of incentive program, if there's any, hey, if you do this, we'll give you that. That is just, it's a non-starter. It's just inherently that disrespectful.
If who does what? 32 owners are the ones who own the damn league. So if it's not like an independent company is coming in and saying, hey, if you do this, not okay, put it this way. It's not like a television network is coming in and saying, if y'all hire minorities, we gonna cut our fees in half. Mm-hmm. It's not one of those. It's not like that. This is the league that's owned by 32 owners that's saying this.
So if they're trying to get more black general managers, black head coaches,
just hire them.
Black quarterback coaches, but they're not. It's not happening. So how do you?
But you tell you what you know what you do? You walk your ass downstairs from up top, and you tell your head coach, "Hire me a black quarterback coach, boy. What the hell is wrong with you?" That's what you do if you really want it to happen. Because I'm running the team. I own it. I don't need to have 31 of my partners in the business of the NFL telling each other, well, you go first and you go first and you go first. No, you should do it. If I want to do it, I'm going to do it. So clearly, you don't want to do it. Stephen Ross obviously decided to do it because he has a black general manager and a black head coach. He decided.
It has to be a conscientious choice.
Exactly.
It has to be a conscientious choice. Like the great Stuart Scott, right? Hero of mine. Hero, talented, accomplished, dynamic, a legend. But it was a conscientious choice to say, we're going to not just put him on air, but keep him on air despite all the pushback from the fact that he's on air because we believe in his talent. You have to make conscientious choices like that. It's not going to happen through osmosis. It's not going to happen just because certain attitudes die away through time. It has to be a conscientious choice by individuals to first decide we're going to do it and then defend it and be willing to fight for it, like the Dodgers did when they brought in Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson wasn't an affirmative action hire. He was an outstanding baseball player. But you have to have the guts to one, bring him into the fold, and then two, defend the decision and let his play show you that it was the right decision. But it starts with intention.
Take it or shake it. Excuse me, guys. Take it or shake it is coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, Key, let's start with an NFL topic right here. Anthony Lynn says that he really likes the quarterback room that they have. He listed all the guys that he has there and that Cam will be helpful to somebody winning games this year. The Chargers will not sign Cam Newton. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Yes.
It's official now, right?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say it's official, but I don't think that they're going to sign him. I think somebody else will sign him because that other team will be desperate to need a quarterback at some point in time and realize, okay. And much like he said, he hasn't had a chance to see Cam Newton. He heard that he's healthy now but hasn't had a chance to lay eyes on him. The closer things get to opening up these buildings in the NFL means that they will now have an opportunity to have their doctors lay eyes on him. So I look for him to be signed by somebody before the start of training camp.
All right, let's take a listen here to Jeremy Fowler, who's talking about how realistic it's going to be that NFL training camps open in June.
So OTAs and mini camp will all be done virtually, and that anything in person will be scrapped. The league is still holding out a sliver of hope. They haven't made a final call on that. I think everybody's more comfortable with training camp later on in the summer because they know they need at least a few weeks to practice and get ready for game action. Any big decision like this with players will have to involve the players' union. And I spoke to somebody just recently about whether they're going to informally poll their hundreds of players about how they feel about getting on planes, getting back in buildings, on practice fields. I was told, yes, they are going to do all those things soon. They're simply not there yet. They need more information.
The NFL will open training camps on time. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
All right. Yeah.
Remember, training camps in the NFL don't start till like the third week of July. So we're basically 3 months away. So in 3 months, a lot of things can change. As you know, week to week, these things happen. Week to week, you don't need a hard deadline for anything right now. If you need to push it back a week or two or so, then push it back a week or so. But in all intents and purposes, I think it will start on time.
That's exactly right. I just can't imagine that anybody can see that far into the future at this point. You know what I mean? That if you told me 2 months ago that we'd be where we are in 2 months, I don't know if I would have believed you. And yet here we are. So 2 months down the road from now, God only knows what it's going to look like, right?
Exactly. And then when you look at when it first jumped off from the beginning standpoint, they were still playing in the NBA. People had contracted, you know, had obviously contracted the virus, but the NBA was still playing. They were actually physically playing games, even though we had cases in the United States. So, and then all of a sudden, it changed, right? And then things change again, and it sped up, and then we start losing more people, then it starts slowing down. So things change every day you look up. So 3 months from now, it could change to the point where they say, oh, okay, we're going all in. We're playing football. Or it could change to the point where people say, we're not playing football. We don't know, so let's not speculate.
All right, so we saw more live sports this weekend. We saw some golf. We saw a NASCAR event. We've seen some European soccer. Of course, we've seen Korean League baseball already as well. You are getting used to seeing sporting events with nobody in the stands. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Oh, you're not used. I'm not used to it either. Yeah, shake it.
Yeah, what have I watched? I haven't watched anything. Right? I've seen highlights.
You've seen highlights. You've seen what it looks like.
Highlights
with nobody
look
out
like
there.
It just looked like some people sitting in the stands, two or three people scrambled around as players, and that's pretty much it. I haven't really, you know, though, first of all, the Korean Baseball League ain't something that I'm going to be watching.
Shouts out to you, Tommy.
NASCAR is something I'm not watching. Shouts out to you, Travis. And golf, golf isn't something that I'm going to be watching. So we're talking about sports that I'm not interested in.
My point is this, is that what looked incredibly bizarre at the beginning, and I'm just talking, I haven't watched a ton of Korean baseball either. I've watched some, but I've watched a bunch of the highlights. What looked so weird of a baseball game being played in an empty stadium, of a NASCAR event being held at a track with nobody in the grandstands has looked more and more normal the more you see it. You just kind of it's amazing how quickly we get used to things. You think you're never, ever going to be able to look at a baseball game without fans. And now it's like, oh, OK, this is the way we got to do it. This is the way we got to do it. It happens.
See, I guess for me, I could look at American baseball. Well, I'm not interested in just watching somebody hit a ball. I need to know who that person is. I need to have a vested interest in watching.
I get the idea of you not wanting to watch the game itself because you're unfamiliar with the players, but I'm just talking about the optics of an empty building.
Well, the optics of an empty building for me would have to be the players that I'm looking at. I have to be able to watch it to even be able to analyze it to say whether or not it will work for me. And we haven't seen that here in our country yet with team sports. So it's hard for me to visualize what it's going to look like. So for that being said, I think I'll still be able to watch sports because it's professionals and I know who they are. I know who's calling the games. So for me, I'll be able to do it without actually visually seeing it. I'll be able to do it because of the players and who's calling the games. When you're talking about international stuff, I just can't get into it.
All right, let's move on to this one from The Last Dance last night. Jerry Krause was portrayed exactly right as the reason the Bulls dynasty came to an end. Take it or shake it.
Early one. You
everything. Think about it, man. The dude just looked miserable all day long. And if I was on that team, I'd have been needling him every time too. Because it's so crazy, man. When I watch MJ Nim, it just reminds me so much of myself. I mean, in terms of just the way I went about my business, you know, when there was – I tell you the story all the time. When there's general managers and scouts, you know, you always – because they think they know every damn thing and don't be knowing nothing because they hit on a player or two. And I tell you Jerry Angelo's story a lot about him coming over to us as we was standing there and him saying, oh, you know, I just realized that Edgerrin James was a really good football player coming out of Miami. I'm like, what? So you can certainly, if you've been around that, you can certainly understand why they treated him the way that they treated him in the way he's portrayed. Think about it. He blew up the Bulls, man. Like, nobody does that. Nobody. You let each piece fall off.
The Bulls.
I understand that, but yes, you let each piece fall off, though. You don't assemble something and tear it down. You ain't never seen Dr. Buss tear down the Lakers.
No, they were never interested in a rebuild. But the reason I phrased the question the way that I did is because Jerry Krause is certainly the biggest reason that the thing was dismantled. But he's not the only reason. Jerry Reinsdorf has some skin in this game that he didn't tell Jerry Krause to stand down at the beginning of that season. Hey, knock that 82-0 stuff off. Hey, stop telling everybody that no matter what happens, Phil Jackson is leaving. Shut up, man. I don't know what I'm going to do with this team yet. It's not all Reinsdorf, but he's got a piece of this too.
But what if Reinsdorf was oblivious, though, and just didn't, like, as owners are?
But he wasn't, Key. When you hear him talk, he wasn't an oblivious guy. He's not oblivious.
Right. He knew what was going on.
I don't know if he is or if he isn't. I'm talking about – I'm not talking about the number crunching. I'm talking about ball. I'm talking about understanding that if you
he knows
him,
that they've won five
him.
Championships in a row.
No, I understand.
He knows that he knows the most important guys are Scotty and Dennis and of course Michael. He knows that Phil Jackson is integral to the success of that team. He knew all of those things. He might not know how to switch on a defensive rotation, but come on, man.
If I got Jerry Krause convincing me other because he put the team together and I got him convincing me the best thing to do is your payroll is going to be $175 million, and you're only bringing in $200 million. But if you do this, you can still bring in that $175, blah, 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 and he's convinced you of this, then, yes, you are oblivious. So I don't really know.
No, you're complicit. If you're saying, hey, look, we're winning 200, or we're making 200 by winning championships, we can make 175 if we break it up.
No, you're oblivious to knowing. You're oblivious to understanding that this is the reason that you made the 175 is that these dudes are the guys, and you're willing to part with them. Says that you are.
How much of this is on Reinsdorf, LZ? Do you think?
I think all of us on Reinsdorf.
No. Jerry's the one that wanted to put the knife in to start with.
Well, listen, you asked me what I thought. I'm going to tell you what I thought.
But you're wrong.
I think all of it's on him because at the end of the day, that's where the buck stops. The buck stops there. This is his business. You don't, it's not as if he was sneaking and embezzling behind, you know, closed doors. He was very public with the, with what he wanted to do from the beginning and throughout the entire season. So the buck stops with the owner.
No, the buck owner, does stop with the owner. There's no question about it. But if the owner is, it doesn't understand and he's allowed somebody else to run it,
the buck still stops with the owner.
Well, put it this way. They messed up. So there you go.
Well, hearing Michael say it last night and then, you know, seeing it again this morning, then replayed, that he wanted to go and try to win that seventh championship, that he wanted to go and keep it going at least one more year. The line that just jumps out at me, what he said last night, he goes, you know, they can't take it from us until they kill us. That they didn't, nobody killed him. They just let it die a death that was unnatural. That let this thing, Steve Kerr would have come back for a year, Michael would have come back for a year. You know, Phil probably could have gotten talked into it. I know that he said that he was done and it was time to move on, but I just don't know how you walk away from greatness like that if you're any of those guys. And Reinsdorf and Kraus seem to be the only guys interested in killing.
And the crazy thing about it is they haven't been the same since.
No. Have they been to, they haven't been to the finals since, that's for sure.
Nope.
Man.
Jordan should find a team.
Seven. Imagine if Michael were 7-0, what would we be talking about, right? It would have been a 12-part series if they were 7-0 along the way. George Karl, one of the guys that was on the wrong end of one of those championship runs, he's going to join us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.